prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply,
it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. We have a really fascinating show today. We're going to be discussing a new study that may give light to why there's an accumulation of tau protein in the Alzheimer model brain with Dr. Laura Blair in just a moment. Before we do that, we have to acknowledge our title sponsor, and that's Legendary Foods. As you know, they have the best low-carb, low-sugar, decadent, tasty pastries, which are kind of like a Pop-Tart, but better. Flakier, thicker crust, and 1 gram, less than 1 gram of sugar, 20 grams of high-quality protein. You can get them by going to shrnetwork.biz/legendary. If you use the code SHR10, you can save 10% off not only your tasty pastries, but also all of the other great snacks. If you're a keto, low-carb, low-sugar person, you'll love it. shrnetwork.biz/legendary, SHR10 for the coupon code. And if you want to try to win, we're giving away dozens of boxes a day now, thanks to the generosity of Ron Penna. And if you listen for the secret word during the commercial break and then email that secret word along with your mailing address to onair@superhumanradio.net, you're pretty sure to get a box of tasty pastries. It's very simple. Pay attention during the commercial breaks, and you could be a winner. And without further delay, bring my guest on. Dr. Laura Blair, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Carl?
Good. Thanks for being here. Dr. Blair is assistant professor of molecular medicine at the University of South Florida. Let's put this up. Thank you, Natalie. The Byrd Alzheimer's Center. Dr. Blair was the principal investigator for the published study that we're talking about today about chaperone protein imbalances promoting toxic tau buildup in the aging brain. The co-lead author of this study was postdoctoral fellow Marinelli Criado Marrero, PhD, and doctoral student Niat Gebru, also from the Blair Library. And the University of South Florida is a favorite of mine because my friend and frequent guest on the show, and that is Dr. Dominic D'Agostino, is based there as well. I don't know if you know him.
Yes, I know him.
In fact, he's going to be back on in about 2 weeks. Anyway, this is a fascinating paper because one of the things that is always implicated in the dementia / Alzheimer brain is this, the accumulation of this tau protein. Why this paper? What preceded this that made you start to look at chaperone proteins?
Yeah, so this has been building for over 10 years now, probably towards this study. So the work that my group is doing now has built out from ideas that my prior mentor had, who passed away about 5 years ago. And some of his seminal work really showed that while the chaperone proteins have good intentions, these are proteins that help with folding and triage of misfolded proteins in the cell and initial folding off of the ribosome when proteins are being made. While they have good intentions and for a long period of time, you know, kind of help maintain homeostasis, certain chaperones in the aged brain with extra insults, extra folding load can actually maintain misfolded proteins longer. So some of his seminal work showed that actually inhibiting the activity of a major chaperone, HSP90, decreased tau levels in the brains of rodent mice with a tauopathic phenotype. And so we've now been building from this, looking at proteins, these co-chaperones that support the HSP90 major chaperone, and kind of piecing apart if we could target this pathway without affecting the whole HSP90 interactome, which is HSP90 is about 3% of your cell's protein at any given time. Under stress, it can go up to 5 or 6%. So this is regulating, you know, almost every pathway in the cell. And so we wanted to try to target only, you know, pathogenic parts of that pathway, in specific times. And so we thought looking at these co-chaperones, these support proteins, would start to let us target a subset of what HSP90 interacts with. And so over the past decade, studies from my PhD work, you know, others in the lab have started to investigate these different co-chaperones, including FKB52 and AHA1, which are the two proteins that we talk about most in this study. And we see previously in tau transgenic mice that these proteins promote tau accumulation, they promote neuronal toxicity. And so in a conversation with a colleague at a seminar a couple years ago, he was like, have you ever tried this in an aged brain, wild type mice? I was like, no. You know, we always have wild type mice included in our studies, you know, to make sure that our manipulation isn't affecting, you know, those mice and that the effects we're seeing is tau specific. And I just happened to have a small cohort of aged mice that next year after that conversation. And so that really built out, why this study happened, because we wanted to model this pro-aggregation environment when chaperones become imbalanced in the aged brain and understand if that could be an initiating event to tau accumulation, neuroinflammation, neurodegeneration. So that really was the basis for why this study happened.
So I've talked about heat shock proteins on this show for years. I did the very first show in 2006 about heat shock protein in muscle actually stimulating a greater anabolic response, protein synthetic response from exercise. So the name is heat shock protein. I guess when they first discovered this group of proteins, it was because someone became overheated, hyperthermia. When we talk about heat shock proteins in the brain, are we talking about the brain reaching excessive temperatures?
So heat shock proteins, there's 332 genes that are considered encoding for heat shock proteins or chaperone proteins in general. And heat shock proteins, not all of them are stress induced, but many of them are. So there's, many members that are stress-induced and many members that are related but not stress-induced and are constitutively expressed, you know, expressed all the time to help with, normal homeostatic activities in the cell. But certainly you want these helper proteins upregulated at times of stress. And heat stress is one of those stressors, but it could also be oxidative stress. Mm-hmm. It could be endoplasmic reticulum stress. It could be, you know, an accumulation of misfolded proteins. Exercise, yes, actually upregulates many of these, you know, heat shock proteins like HSP70 in the cell. And so there are lots of ways to upregulate heat shock proteins, the ones that are inducible. So it's not just elevated temperature, but certainly that is one of the insults that will elevate, the inducible forms.
So you said endoplasmic reticulum, so I'm going to go right to that question now. So we know that the endoplasmic reticulum in the aged brain, especially when fragmented sleep is in the picture, seems to make a lot of misfolded proteins. And these misfolded proteins, they have the ability to kind of get sticky and aggregate and stick to stuff and accumulate like plaque. And do we know for sure this is not a situation of overproduction that these proteins, these chaperone proteins are designed to handle, become overwhelmed as opposed to under clearance?
Yeah, so there's two factors here, and we can talk about tau specifically and then ER resident proteins. So the ER has a lot of complex folding that it has to do. Any ER resident protein or protein that's secreted or on a membrane is made inside of the ER, right? So you think of membrane proteins, you know, a membrane being a lipid layer. Right. These proteins many of them have to feed in and out and in and out and in and out. You know, so something like cystic fibrosis, transmembrane regulator, this CFTR related protein, it has, I think, like 9 or 12 transmembrane domains. So in any given good situation, only about 25% of it is folded properly, even with normal, you know, chaperones around. But you only need about 5% to not have a cystic fibrosis symptoms. Mm-hmm. You know, so for normal, healthy people, you know, the cell knows it's very inefficient to generate and fold. So it makes enough, right, to overcome that limitation, and everything is in balance. If you have mutations, like it can happen in cystic fibrosis, oftentimes it's caused by a specific mutation, a lack of a phenylalanine in that membrane protein. And if you have that situation, then you get, you know, extra degradation, actually, of that protein that's actually driven by AHA1. It's been shown, one of the proteins right. we're talking about here.
Right.
For tau is not an ER resident protein. So this is a cytosolic protein, but cytosolic proteins still can affect ER proteins. ER health can still affect cytosolic health. You know, they use overlapping degradation machinery, right? The proteasome system is kind of your first pass at degrading most proteins that are coming from the ER through a pathway called ERAD, this ER-associated degradation. So they're getting funneled out of the endoplasmic reticulum to the proteasome for degradation. And so for tau, ER health is important for calcium homeostasis, for, you know, basically keeping the other environments, oxidative, you know, stressors, these types of things that can feed in from ER and mitochondrial health. But the chaperones we're talking about today are mainly cytosolic, where tau is in the cytosol instead of inside of the ER. But certainly both environments influence each other.
So describe, how was your study designed?
Yeah, so because we wanted to mimic this imbalance in chaperone levels, because that's what happens in aging and in neurodegenerative diseases, where the expression of, you know, these 332 genes completely shifts. You have a downregulation of a huge subset of these chaperone proteins and an upregulation of a smaller but still, you know, important number of chaperones. And so we really wanted to take a couple proteins and try to mimic that environment, this imbalance. And so because we knew FKBP52 and AHA1, these co-chaperones of HSP90, you know, promoted this aggregation environment, you know, this pro-aggregation environment, we took those and overexpressed them using AAV9, this adeno-associated virus, inside the hippocampus of rodents, of mice, using intracranial injections. So we injected directly into the hippocampus, the center of learning and memory that's important in Alzheimer's disease, that, you know, loses a lot of its neurons, you know, early on in Alzheimer's disease. So that way we could see, you know, what the effects were in rodents and wild type mice. We started the injections at 9 months of age. So they were already, you know, decently old when we started, and we aged them for 7 months. So we harvested them when they were 16 months of age. So a decently aged model at that point.
So what did you find when you looked at their brains?
Yeah, so looking at their brains, we kind of thought it would be all or nothing. Both of these chaperones would do something remarkable, or neither one would do something. And we kind of, you know, were nervous to find out. And we started staining for total tau, different phospho-tau epitopes. So phosphorylated tau is correlated or is highly found in Alzheimer's disease brain. And so we started looking at these AD-related phosphocytes of tau. And, you know, for certain species, for total tau and certain phosphoepitopes, we saw AHA1 promoted the accumulation of those. And for others, we actually saw FKBP52, this other chaperone, promoted kind of unique phosphorylation sites of tau to be affected. So we were kind of surprised that it wasn't all or nothing, that we got this different effect. And so we started looking at other related pathways. Neuroinflammation is a very, you know, related pathology that happens in Alzheimer's disease and is related to tau accumulation. And we saw neuroinflammation significantly upregulated in only the mice overexpressing FKB52. And those mice also showed neuronal loss when we went and did stereology, where we counted the neurons inside of the region that we had injected. So we saw this difference in pathology and difference in neuronal health, right, from these two different chaperones, which we didn't really expect at the onset. We kind of thought they both would create, you know, a similar environment. And so, you know, it really brings up all of their other roles in the cell potentially, right? These other pathways that are involved, you know, that they may be acting directly on tau, but they may also be regulating, for example, FKB52 is most well characterized for its role in steroid hormone receptor recycling, and also, you know, involved in microtubule assembly inside of neurons. And has other links to inflammation. So it has direct links to inflammation as well. And so, you know, we think that now using these models that don't target tau directly, that it's kind of this indirect accumulation of tau that's neurotoxic, right, that at least is concomitant with neurotoxicity, that now we can start to piece apart, you know, what's happening first, what's important, you know, for neurotoxicity to happen.
Right.
We think that it's a useful model now to understand more of the biology, you know, between the chicken and the egg, the tau and the toxicity.
Right, right. So you mentioned steroid hormones, right? We know that estradiol, E2, is profound anti-inflammatory in the brain, both the male and the female brain. In fact, if you were in a car accident and you bang your head in the windshield, the brain will spontaneously start to aromatize androgens in men to produce E2 to kind of sequester the swelling, keep it from, I mean, it's very powerful. So we see these conditions in older individuals. Do you think that the kind of push-pull, it sounds like there's a push-pull happening here, right? It sounds like, you know, there's one thing that's working against you, and there's something that's supposed to stabilize it, but now it's working against you as well, so things move faster. Do you think that it's that hormone milieus play a role in the progression of the inflammation that may actually kind of catch fire in the brain and make this go faster?
I think it's very possible. You know, FKP52's main steroid hormones that it's been characterized for, androgen receptor, glucocorticoid receptor, these are the ones kind of most highly talked about, mineralocorticoid receptor with FKB52. So certainly those pathways could be, you know, links between the insult, right, or overexpression of FKB52 and this downstream pathogenesis in these animals that actually cause cognitive dysfunction. So when we did behavioral tasks using spatial learning and memory, we saw that those same mice had issues with a complex spatial memory task.
Interesting.
And so, which is hippocampal dependent.
Right.
And so we think that, you know, there might be many pathways that 52 is involved with that are contributing here. So that's, you know, one of the things we want to follow up on in the study now that we've seen results, because going in, we didn't know that we would find anything. You know, we kind of had a hypothesis and we just wanted to test it and see, you know, what the results were, because we didn't see any of these pathologies, any of these results in younger mice. When we had done, you know, acute studies using these same overexpressing these chaperones in young wild type mice. So it's something about either the length of time that they were upregulated or the age of the brain, you know, at the beginning or end or both, that kind of created this susceptibility to taking on these, you know, pathologies that, you know, we don't see when we do this for a shorter time in younger mice.
Did you look at anything that would show or point to a role of insulin resistance, insulin sensitivity in the effects of these two chaperone proteins?
So we didn't in this study, you know, because we were, you know, it's the initial time that we're doing this. You know, you only have a finite amount of tissue and, you know, you're not really sure what you're looking for, right, at the onset. So unfortunately, we didn't in this study, but we hope to. And that is already, you know, a piece of the pathways, right, that we know FKB52 regulates and a piece of the plan for future studies.
Yeah, because when you start to look at the Alzheimer model, the human Alzheimer model, these people are almost always metabolically deranged, and there is a real phenomenon of insulin resistance in the brain, which was coined type 3 diabetes about a decade ago. It kind of oversimplifies the real thing going on in the brain. But when you look at just the onset of Alzheimer's disease and relatively young people too. I mean, we have people, I mean, there was a movie that won an Academy Award about 5 years ago, Still Sarah or something like that, about a 40-year-old mom with children who got Alzheimer's disease. It's happening younger and younger in our population. And a lot of the people working in that arena keep saying, you know, it's yet another part of the fallout from metabolic disorders in humans. And that's why I would think that insulin should, you know, what is going on with insulin? And more importantly, what's going on with glucose getting into the cell? Because I have this weird feeling, you know, I play with hot rods and hot rod motorcycles. And if you run before fuel injection, when you tuned your carburetor, if you run your engine too lean, it'll actually produce a lot of power for a short period of time. But the cylinders get so hot, you burn a hole in the piston. And I always imagine the brain starving for glucose, having to do executive tasks that you can't bail out on, being that piston getting a hole burned in the center of it because it really can't get – and these people are not in ketosis. So it's not like, well, they have a backup of ketones to run their brain. And the brain just kind of burns out because it's being the demands for work – and no fuel. I don't know why, but I always think that's like someone's going to discover that's the core of all this problem here.
Well, it'd be nice if we discover the core of all this problem, right? That would be really ideal.
Yeah.
There are links in mice lacking FKB51 to insulin signaling. So those mice actually have increased they are more sensitive to high-fat diets. So it's actually counterproductive to have less of this in knockout mice, you know. So I don't know what happens if you take it out, you know, in an adult mouse, but, you know, at least in young mice. So that might mean, you know, you need to be careful with, you know, how you're tuning the system, right? That, you know, I think chaperone balance, right, is one of the key features that will help these systems work in homeostasis. And so, you know, we don't necessarily want to overtune in any one direction, right? Because that could also, you know, create imbalance. And there is a partner protein of FKB52, which is FKB51, this highly related gene that actually has a lot of the inverse activities in steroid hormone signaling and insulin. And so we hope to include that in future studies as well. Because they both seem to regulate tau similarly, but these other pathways, they regulate in opposite manners, most of them. And so we think that will help dissect out, right, which pathways are really important, you know, for all of the phenotypes and pathologies we're measuring in these brains.
Isn't tau protein also implicated in Parkinson's disease, but instead of the hippocampus, it's happening in the substantia nigra?
So there's about 25 different neurodegenerative diseases that have tau pathology. So Parkinson's disease is the second most common neurodegenerative disease with tau pathology. About 50% of cases of Parkinson's have tau pathology, at least somewhere, you know, in their brain. Mm-hmm. Typically, it's cortical expression accumulation that's happening. You know, in those different tauopathies, it can accumulate in glial cells in some of them. Mm-hmm. Typically it's neurons, but even that neuronal accumulation can look different depending on which disease is being focused on. And so it seems highly important. And because some of those diseases are actually caused by mutations in tau, the mutations that we use in many of the standard rodent models, you know, that drive disease, right? And that's how we model it often in the lab.
We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, you already said one of the things that surprised you was the, you know, all or nothing phenomenon that didn't seem to pan out. I want to ask you if there's anything else that surprised you. And then also in the next segment, from a 30,000-foot view, is there anything we can kind of tie together and say, well, this happens the most often in these types of situations? We're talking with Dr. Laura Blair, and she is part of the University of Southern Florida system. You know what I'm always amazed by USF? They have so many young, brilliant people there. I think it's because Florida attracts people who have a young spirit. And they have a great program there where you can get your lab together and start doing things that you love to focus on. I love USF. I think it's a fantastic school, really, really good school. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio. If there is one mineral you should be worried about not getting enough of, it's magnesium. Magnesium is the body's master mineral, powering over 300 critical reactions, including detoxification, fat metabolism, energy, and even digestion is influenced by the presence of magnesium. That's why I'm so excited to tell you about a new magnesium product I've been taking now called Magnesium Breakthrough. It's the ultimate magnesium supplement, easily the best I've ever seen or experienced. With all seven forms of magnesium, I was able to arrange an amazing deal for my audience, and I guarantee it's the best deal available on this product. Seriously, with volume discounts combined with our custom 10% coupon code SHR10, you can save up to 40% off select packages of Magnesium Breakthrough. And I promise that this deal is only available on this specific website, magbreakthrough.com/SHR. You won't find that deal on Amazon or even on the company's own website. Go to magbreakthrough.com/SHR and use code SHR10 to save up to 40% off select packages of Magnesium Breakthrough.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Being superhuman means being conscientious about the choices we make. White Oak Pastures is superhuman when it comes to raising livestock. They're committed to animal welfare, land regeneration, and rural revival. They responsibly manage the entire process from the pasture to your doorstep. High-quality, pasture-raised, great-tasting meat from a farm you can trust. Full nose-to-tail selections. They even have options for your pet. Go to shrnetwork.biz/whiteoak and use code SHR20 to save 20% off your entire first order. Tau protein. You've heard us talk about the power of copper peptides here on the show. Now try it yourself with RestoraCell's amazing new skincare line built on the power of blue copper peptides. All natural, organic, made in the USA, and safe for sensitive skin. Save 30% on their Stem Cell Awakening Serum. Go to shrnetwork.biz/RestoraCell. That's RestoraCell. And use code SHR to save 30% off. Remodel your skin today. Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out, or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000. Or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to redcon1.com. That's redcon, the number one.com, or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon One banner ad today.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Hey, welcome back. I got a little message for the audience. A lot of you are sending in emails with the secret word, which you hopefully you listened to the last commercial because it was in there. It was actually two words. What the hell? It's tau protein. Anyway, we want to give away tasty pastries, but the problem I have is we can't ship them outside the United States. They have USA only right now until Legendary Foods has the ability to ship abroad. So those of you who are sending in secret words, I'm not ignoring you, but we can't ship outside the United States. So Canada, Mexico, and a lot of people from overseas. I'm getting emails from Germany. I'm getting emails from Sweden. And so we can't ship them. I'm sorry. I would if I could, but we can't. We're talking with Dr. Laura Blair. We're talking about tau protein accumulation in the aging brain, and they may have discovered why it accumulates. So the first thing, I know you talked about that aha moment, like this isn't what we suspected, but was there anything else that really jumped out at you in this research that went made you go, wow, I did not expect to see that?
Yeah, so one other surprising finding that we had was that we didn't see tau oligomers, at least by the methods we used, accumulating. And we think that may be methodology. So tau oligomers are now thought to be these intermediate, you know, protein aggregates that are, you know, more than single tau monomers, but not quite, you know, to these fibril tangle states, right? These in-between phases are now thought to be the most toxic forms of tau inside of neurons. And so when we got toxicity and tau accumulation, we kind of expected to see tau oligomers also be present, right? Because we were getting toxicity and, you know, behavioral deficits. And so we didn't see those accumulate. And so we think it might be something to do with the antibodies we have that are, you know, really made to measure human tau oligomers. Human mm-hmm. tau and mouse tau are a little bit different. So we think that potentially other reagents may be needed to measure those intermediate states using mouse tau. So we're not convinced that they weren't there. You know, we don't know if they were, but that was certainly something that was surprising to us to not find because of the striking neurotoxicity that we saw, you know, with the tau accumulation.
So a tau accumulation, it requires other things to become sticky, right? The protein itself misfolded, you know, improper syntax, you know, poor bonds, that unique component of it isn't what makes it sticky, right? Something else makes it sticky, right?
So it's highly regulated by post-translational modifications, these, you know, amino acid modifications within the tau protein. It's a very long protein. There's 441 amino acids. 80 of those can be phosphorylated, this, you know, common post-translational modification. Many of them can be acetylated, ubiquitinated, you know, these other post-translational modifications. So in Alzheimer's disease, the kind of two most correlated post-translational modifications are phosphorylation and acetylation. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the accumulation of these phosphoepitopes may be one of the things that helps kind of tip the balance. Mm-hmm. Of, you know, solubility, because on its own, it's a fairly soluble protein. It's actually hard to get it to fall out of solution, you know, in a lab. So it actually is fairly good at not aggregating. So it is, you know, some of these other drivers, you know, potentially other protein interactors. It actually, you know, has a lot of other proteins that aggregate with it. So when you see these tau tangles, you know, these tau accumulations, it's not the only protein that's there.
Right.
You know, if you stain for other proteins or pull that out and look at mass spectrometry, this, you know, proteomics, you can see a lot of other proteins right. present. And some of those are actually molecular chaperones that are isolated with the tau, no longer doing their job.
And stuck together.
Right? Yeah. And so those studies yeah. have been done showing yeah. that, you know, it's actually pulling things like HSP70, you know, away from its role in the cell, and that you can overcome that with things like heat shock and chaperone activators, you know, to try to rebalance the system.
So in the human Alzheimer model, does it skew gender, more men than women as we age, or is it pretty even? Do you know?
So in humans, there's more females than males. About two-thirds of Alzheimer's disease is females. In mouse models, it's different model to model. And so when you say Alzheimer's disease model, it's really tough, right? Because there's two main hallmarks of Alzheimer's disease. One of them is A-beta, one of them is tau. There's models of each of those. There's models of them together. No one model recapitulates everything. I heard a talk recently where the speaker said, all models are terrible, but some models are useful. You know, and it's something as scientists we relate to of like, you know, there's benefits to any model as long as you know the limitations of it.
Right.
And so with different models, there's actually different sex biases in them. Some of the models that we work with most have a female bias. But there are others where, you know, the females have lost their ability to accumulate tau over lots of breeding generations and the males still have their phenotype or vice versa. So it's really hard to blanket answer that question.
One of the dry models of Alzheimer's disease is based on iron accumulation in the brain. And this is something that strikes men more often until women go through menopause and they stop their period and losing blood, and it catch it and they catch up. And we talked about this on the show with one of the times that Dr. Dale Bredesen was on the show. Could this be a factor in the what's going on with these proteins, these chaperone proteins? Could it be driven by – because iron is the most oxidative and inflammatory of anything that we consume and put in our body. And unfortunately, it bioaccumulates, and we really don't have a good system for removing it except when red blood cells turn over and the pancreas – I mean the spleen tries to get rid of the red blood cell and gets rid of the iron as well. So we don't have a – we don't have a system that stops iron accumulation from going too high, and it does accumulate in the brain as well, and it's been seen in the brain of the Alzheimer's patients. What do you think about iron?
Yeah, I've seen some studies out of UCI on iron and different metals in tau models and other models of Alzheimer's disease. And certainly there has been good links between them. I don't know the literature between iron and molecular chaperones. So I don't know that I can fully answer the specific question that you have in kind of tying those three items together. Mm-hmm. But certainly it's something that probably has, you know, some data in the literature. You know, molecular chaperones are some of the most conserved proteins throughout species. So they've been studied, you know, in detail for some time. And so I expect that literature to be readily available.
I don't
probably interesting to make a link.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to find one thing, you know, and the notion or the wanting to reduce problems in the human body, the most complex thing in our world is our body, and try to find the one thing is an insult to the complexity of the human body. So, you know, I have to put this question up. Because it's an important question. It speaks to what I'm about to say. So Rick Kester says, as someone who suffers from memory loss and diminished thinking skills, this is pretty scary. I hope there's some kind of cure or something that can diminish the effects, unless that was mentioned in the video and I missed it. So I want to give you an opportunity to answer his question first, and then I have an opinion as well. But my opinion is pretty worthless because I don't have any letters after my name, so... What do you think?
Sure. So, you know, I'm working in a preclinical lab with hopes of moving these ideas and these models forward to translation, right, as we understand more about the biology. But there are a lot of effective clinical trials right now that are showing promise. You know, one of the trials that just got started at USF Health is on cognitive training. So they're using these computer programs to basically you know, train the brain for more complex tasks than they're used to running. And in a pilot study showed really remarkable results. So I think that there is movement forward for, you know, hope of treatments. I think the more we know, I agree, it's not going to be one single target. So I think any one of these studies that has one target, hopefully each of them will start to show some effect, right? And possibly combining some of the ideas together may show the most promise, you know, in the end. And so I think it's really a feed forward system that's, you know, something, you know, and I think molecular chaperones is just a piece of that, right? It's certainly not the only piece that's going wrong, but I think it's a piece, right? Getting the ball rolling potentially that could be, you know, modulated to help, you know, get the ball back on the track some, but there's certainly other aspects that need to come in as well. And so, you know, my models are still preclinical. I hope to use them, right, to now test things that can, you know, change the outcome, right, to understand more about what protects against those outcome, what prevents them, what reverses, you know, them from happening at different stages of disease. But certainly there are, you know, clinical trials that have hope out there. And I would encourage you to find a local, you know, university or center nearby that has access to those clinical trials to potentially, you know, have hope, you know, for people currently suffering from memory loss, you know, because the data that I'm generating will hopefully create something, you know, in coming years, but it takes a while, you know, to get it to the point of a clinical trial. So I would encourage, you know, everyone to, you know, speak with their physicians to find, you know, current trials that they could engage with, even healthy adults. There's a lot of trials in healthy adults. And that is something we really need data on, right? We need to know the difference, right, of what makes healthy aging apart from, you know, this dysfunction that can happen, this neurodegeneration that can happen, you know, regardless of which neurodegenerative disease, you know, each of them is important to have a control group. So even if you aren't, you know, personally affected, you know, getting engaged with the research around you helps our community immensely and helps us have more knowledge and more, you know, biosamples to understand the disease in more in-depth way so we can do our best, right, to help create, you know, a better solutions. Understanding of what's going on and effective therapies, right? We need to know what's going wrong. And we're starting to, you know, peel away layers of that. And I feel like there's hope coming and there's current, you know, progress that you can have access to around you. So I would encourage you to take advantage of that.
So what I would tell you to do is pick up the book, An End to Alzheimer's by Dr. Dale Bredesen. I really think that no one in this silo has done more to flesh out an approach to manage Alzheimer's until we find a cure. He can't say he's curing Alzheimer's. He's never been able to say that. But he's making the symptoms go away. And his book details, I think it's 5 or 7 steps, but it's a lifestyle. So I mean, some of the things that he talks about are hormone replacement therapy for people who are seeing their youthful levels drop. But also things like strenuous exercise and stop eating 3 hours before you go to bed. You know, one of the problems we have today is people stay up till midnight, 2 o'clock in the morning watching Jimmy Kimmel, and they're eating the whole time. Then they get in bed and the sanitation system of the brain doesn't do what it's supposed to do when you are digesting food in your sleep. So his book is backed by one small, one large study. The second study was 200 people, 200 patients, and it was multi-centered. So he showed that it could be done by other physicians, and they all resumed normal lives. In fact, one guy was retiring early because he couldn't run his company any longer. And then after the 200-person study, he actually opened 3 new offices and felt like he had gotten his life back. Now, again, Bredesen doesn't cure or claim to cure Alzheimer's disease, but what he does do is start to shift things because people with Alzheimer's disease will tell you, oh, I have good days and I have bad days. Some days I feel – and the people who care for them, oh, he was so lucid yesterday. Today he's not talking at all. And they don't think that their lifestyle has anything to do with the disease, and the lifestyle is really causing the disease. It's causing these chaperone proteins to get fouled up. It's causing all these different things to occur. Fragmented sleep, it destroys short-term memory consolidation, all these things. So pick up Dr. Bredesen's book. But here's the problem. with most people, they'll look at that and they go, oh my God, I can't eat this anymore. I have to go to sleep at 9 o'clock. I'm not doing that. Then God bless you. Wait for a pill. But if you really want to take control, and this is true of just about any disease state that you can be faced with today, from autoimmunity on, you know, Dominic D'Agostino is working on ketogenic diet and cancer. He's doing amazing things. Glioblastoma is shrinking and disappearing because of the keto diet. Get Bredesen's book, read it, and apply it. And I predict that something good will come of it. Will you be completely back to normal? Maybe not. But will you stop progressing further? Maybe so. That's what I would suggest, because that's something you can do right away. We're going to take our last commercial break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more. Remember those rectangular toaster pastries you used to love when you were a kid? Well, Legendary Foods has just made them better. The new cake-style tasty pastry is like nothing you've ever had before. With 20 grams of high-quality protein and less than 1 gram of sugar, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to shrnetwork.biz/legendary and use the code SHR10 to save 10% off your purchase of tasty pastries. Now available in cookies and cream, red velvet cake, birthday cake, blueberry, strawberry, brown sugar cinnamon, and hot fudge sundae. Go to shrnetwork.biz/legendary and use code SHR10 today. Tau Protein. TaylorMade Health is focused on making sure you're able to perform and look your best. They are a leader in game-changing supplements and cosmetic products. Whether you want to increase strength, expedite recovery, facilitate soft tissue repair, or reduce deep wrinkles, TaylorMade Health has you covered. TaylorMade Health is also the home to Dr. Seed's products such as BPC, BPC Plus, and the Chill Pill. All of my listeners can now get 20% off their first order with code TRY20. That's TRY20. This code can even be used on subscription orders. Visit shrnetwork.biz/try20 today and use code TRY20 for 20% off your first order. Every day, there's a new wellness trend. Eat that. Do this. Avoid those. How do you know where to start or who to trust? Inside Tracker helps you cut through the noise by analyzing your blood, your DNA, your lifestyle, and your fitness tracker to provide you with a science-backed, trackable action plan on how to live, age, and perform better. Personalized one-size-fits-one recommendations to help you optimize you. For a limited time, Inside Tracker is offering Superhuman Radio listeners 25% off the entire store. Go to shrnetwork.biz/InsideTracker, InsideTracker, to save 25% off. Change begins on the inside. If there is one mineral you should be worried about not getting enough of, it's magnesium. Magnesium is the body's master mineral, powering over 300 critical reactions, including detoxification, fat metabolism, energy, and even digestion is influenced by the presence of magnesium. That's why I'm so excited to tell you about a new magnesium product I've been taking now called Magnesium Breakthrough. It's the ultimate magnesium supplement, easily the best I've ever seen or experienced. With all 7 forms of magnesium, I was able to arrange an amazing deal for my audience, and I guarantee it's the best deal available on this product. Seriously, with volume discounts combined with our custom 10% coupon code SHR10, you can save up to 40% off select packages of Magnesium Breakthrough. And I promise that this deal is only available on this specific website, magbreakthrough.com/SHR. You won't find that deal on Amazon or even on the company's own website. Go to magbreakthrough.com/SHR and use code SHR10 to save up to 40% off select packages of Magnesium Breakthrough. Being superhuman means being conscientious about the choices we make. White Oak Pastures is superhuman when it comes to raising livestock. They're committed to animal welfare, land regeneration, and rural revival. They responsibly manage the entire process from the pasture to your doorstep. High quality, pasture raised, great tasting meat from a farm you can trust. Full nose-to-tail selections. They even have options for your pet. Go to shrnetwork.biz/whiteoak and use code SHR20 to save 20% off your entire first order.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Welcome back. Talking with Dr. Laura Blair. So, I mean, in the answer to the last question posed by someone in the audience, you've kind of said what you're hoping to do with this research, to push it forward and hopefully have a way to apply it to people. And is there anything that you can tell people now? Is there anything that you know, like that 30,000-foot view looking down, like, you know, maybe people should do this, don't do that? Anything?
Yeah, so there was a study in the Lancet Journal. I think it was last year that it came out, and they identified in different stages of life factors that were modifiable and not modifiable as far as creating risk for Alzheimer's disease. And early in life, the amount of education seems to be a prime factor. After that, in midlife, things like hypertension, obesity actually, you know, correlate with more risk. In later life, depression, smoking, physical inactivity, social isolation, diabetes, these are things that, you know, each give a couple percentage points of susceptibility potentially for Alzheimer's disease. So, you know, I would say, you know, be mindful of if you, you know, suffer from any one of those disorders or multiple of those disorders, you know, have a close relationship with your physician who can help you navigate those, you know, those are the ones that potentially we can modify, you know, through our choices in life and with the guidance of, you know, a physician helping us, you know, navigate what's best, you know, based off of our, you know, family history and, you know, situation. So I think that there are, you know, a lot of pieces that, you know, we can contribute already to, you know, changing our risk. You know, 35% is pretty big, you know, if you think of it in the grand scheme of things. And each one of them is 1 or 2 or 5%, you know, but, you know, those can add up. So I think, you know, doing everything we can as individuals to kind of make ourselves as resilient as possible, you know, is wonderful. You know, as far as our research goes, yes, you know, some of that actually getting into clinics is, you know, a few years away, but we're hoping that we'll understand more about the biology and that will also help other groups, right, know how to apply their treatments and applications, right, that it'll be bigger than our group alone, right? Like working on this and understanding more from this model. And so, you know, we're hoping to add other factors, you know, that we can, you know, help change, right? Help change the path that we're set on.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's fantastic. And I hope that you'll come back, especially once you have some insights into the role of insulin resistance and these chaperone proteins being out of balance. I have a feeling there's going to be something there for you. I really do. I mean, it doesn't take any intelligence. Actually, I have Dr. Sarah Kaufman coming back on next week to discuss the fact that we are all pre-diabetic. And the reason we say this is because few physicians check insulin. They check blood glucose. And maybe your blood glucose is 82 fasting. And your doctor goes, that's great. But when they look at insulin, your pancreas is at 95% duty cycle. Like, it's doing everything it can to keep it at 82. And so it's just a matter of time before the pancreas goes, oh, I'm done. And boom, now all of a sudden you're diabetic. And, you know, we have the number one killer of Americans, all diseases, and I say this without – wanting to apologize for my ignorance because I have a feeling it's true. But the number one killer of Americans is insulin resistance. It's type 2 diabetes, whether you have frank type 2 diabetes undiagnosed, because heart disease is an offshoot of insulin resistance. You know, cancer, we know that cancer happens in people who are metabolically deranged, much more so, more frequently. When you look at all of the splinter disorders, you know, kidney disorders because of high blood pressure and you know, hypertension comes from angiotensin converting enzyme, which is influenced by insulin and blah, blah, blah. When you look at the big kahuna, the thing that's killing Americans, it's insulin resistance. But we break it into all these other little treatable specialties And I'm sure that Alzheimer's happens more frequently in people who are diabetic. I'm willing to bet. I don't know. I didn't look it up before the show. But I have a strange feeling that when you start looking at the insulin sensitivity issues within the brain, it's going to correlate with the imbalances in the chaperone proteins. And I hope you'll come back on when you have looked at that to say, Carl, you were wrong. You were so wrong about that. So Rick says, thank you both. And also we have someone else who said, great show. Resolved on their own, which is pretty stupid. So he's had issues for years. I do have bad sleeping issues. That's number one. If you sleep poorly, memory consolidation goes out the window. That's given whether you have tau protein accumulation or not. You can't stay up late. Get the blue blocking glasses. Get the blue lights to stop. Put them on at sundown, wherever you are. He eats around 5 p.m., but sleeping is his main issue. Looking into herbs. Don't worry about herbs and stuff like that. Get your sleep fixed. That's 90% of it. Get your sleep fixed. Figure out what's going on. Do a sleep study. Are you snoring? You know, people who just moderately snore, they seem to produce more cortisol in their sleep. And if you're producing cortisol in your sleep, that's the wake up, get up, let's do things hormone. And it actually is the antithesis of melatonin. So, you know, get your sleep fixed. That's the number one. And then you're going to feel so much better. And then you take the other things in stride and figure out what else you can do. What do you think, Dr. Blair?
I agree. Get your sleep fixed. Do a sleep study.
Yeah.
Work with somebody who can, yeah, figure out what's going on. If you have sleep apnea, if you have, you know, something else, you just need to change some habits. You know, I would totally agree with you. But
if your insurance won't pay for sleep,
be looked at first.
Yeah, that's number one. And there's an app called Sleep Cycle. It will record your snoring episodes at night, plus give you a graph of your movements at night to show if you're restless, restful. Get the Sleep Cycle app. Sleep with it for 4 or 5 nights, and then email me at onair@superhumanradio.net and tell me what you learn, because you'll learn a lot. Thank you for being here, Dr. Blair.
Thank you for having me, Carl.
Take care. And that's it for today. We will see you tomorrow with more Superhuman Radio. Don't forget, share the show. Help someone find answers. And don't forget, listen for that secret word. Go back and play the commercial breaks back again. Because we're giving away tasty pastries faster than we can ship them out. All right, see you tomorrow.